Stevie J. Kilgore, writer.
Okay, so you're about to launch a print magazine called Hate Camel, is that correct?
That's right, yeah. It's the Hate Camel. The whole basis of it is satire. It's an opportunity for Leeds to take a look at itself and have a good laugh. It's going to be a printed magazine. It's not going to be online. And it's going to look very punk DIY. A throwback to the early 90s, I think. Make people go out and find it, as opposed to give it to them on their smartphones or iPads.
So what's the kind of ethos behind it then? You're talking about this idea of, is it a resistance for technology? Is it resistance against online stuff?
Well, it started out as an opportunity just to really poke a bit of fun out of the current glossy culture in Leeds. You've got your, I won't name the magazines, but, you know, they 90% adverts, 5% listings, and maybe 5% slight interest in what might be going on. But the whole point of it was just to put out there a lot of new comedy, free writing. I had a friend, John Davison, who introduced me to this idea of free writing through a local zine he did, and it's just an opportunity to just print stuff unedited and as vicious as it wants to be. And if it can provoke a reaction, which is what I want to do with the Hate Camel, that's perfect. I want people to notice it and partly be offended and outraged and want to get in touch, and then they can contribute themselves. I think but the whole idea that it won't be online is just making people work for it. I think there's so much information out there and it's just given to people so easily. So the whole thing is to make people go and find it.
So with this magazine, what can people expect if they pick up a copy of The Hate Camel in a bar or wherever you're going to leave it? I mean, what can they expect to see?
Well, for those that are on a first date maybe and they're not too sure what to say to each other, then they can join each other in slagging off the magazine, you know, over a cheap glass of rosé or whatever it is they're drinking. But I'm hoping people will pick it up and through big glazed eyes be absolutely outraged by it. Then you'll find someone with probably as twisted and dark sense of humour as me that will think is absolutely genius and want to get involved themselves. Yeah.
So with contributing them, are you going to have it post only? Are you going to accept submissions by post, or is it going to be written up on a typewriter maybe?
Well, I did actually try and find a font that I could use, but that would look like an old Remington 1950s Kerouac style, but haven't yet found it. Parts of it are actually going to be handwritten, and I've had a couple of people, now the first issue's done, the second issue's already in planning, and people have come up to me with, I had one contribution which was an old card, an old birthday card they had, and it was marker penned from when they were in school, and it was this very vicious story about setting fire to a ginger kid. Now, obviously a complete fairy tale, but well, more nightmare, but they've submitted that, and the whole thing is to photocopy that, cut it out, stick it down, gaffer tape, and then send it to printers to make it look even more tatty than it did first time round.
So how many copies of this are you trying to kind of distribute around Leeds?
The first issue is going to be 300 copies. We're just going to put them in various bars. I'm not going to keep the same venues for every issue. I'm going to try and mix it up a bit. My favourite pubs in Leeds, anyone that knows me, are the Old Man kind of bars. So maybe this will cause a few heart attacks if it's in the right bars and people are picking it up of a certain age. But I'm just going to try and put it in everybody's face, really. Yeah.
Excellent. So let's go to your writing then. I mean, I've been familiar with your humorous writing, your poetry, your kind of travel writing since, well, for about 5 years now. I was just wondering if you could talk to me a bit about your poetry and what kind of inspires it.
Yeah, I mean, I only started writing poetry probably about 3 or 4 years ago. I used to love what is probably known as flash fiction. It's shorter than a short story, you know. And when I first started writing, I didn't know how to structure work. I wanted to tell the whole story in a sentence, and that isn't really much of a story to tell then. But I realised that I could probably say a lot more with fewer words in poetry. And one of the biggest inspirations was, or still is, Charles Bukowski, who himself probably wouldn't have put him down as a great poet, but it just veered away from the academic poet, you know. And I think the academic poets absolutely hate the sort of stuff I'd write, and they hate the stuff that Bukowski write. But he was the biggest influence. It's not formulated in the same way as Keats, you know, Byron, people like this. So it is a massive inspiration, was like the Beat Generation and just Bukowski in general.
So what is it then, what do you draw inspiration from for this work?
The darker side of life. It's not all daffodils and long fields of meadows, is it? You know, but it is definitely the coffee culture or the dark corner in a bar. Anyone that knows Bukowski's stuff will know that it's very bar orientated, lots of women, lots of drink, not really remembering much, and scrawling down on pieces of napkin and paper things you can remember. So that's definitely something that inspires me. Not that I necessarily lead that life, but it's I find it a lot more entertaining and a lot more inspiring than Happy Days.
So that kind of leads me on to the question I was going to ask, actually, is to what extent then is your poetry autobiographical, or is it fictional, or is it somewhere in between? Or
the funny thing is that a lot of it is a lot of it's true, so it is autobiographical. It's but what I find is that I self-edit too much. I mean, poems that I've submitted to Artfist, various other magazines, they're fourth or fifth kind of versions of it. The first versions are written in, it sounds a bit of a cliche, but they're written in the heat at the moment almost. And they can be very gritty and quite offensive, I think. And I do tend to name things or people that I know in them, and then three versions down the line, I better take that out. Just swap that bit. So I've got this terrible habit of self-editing, and I wish I could let go of that and just throw it all out. And then people would know, oh no, it's very serious. It's very what he does, and he even names his GP in it, you know. But I think it does look, because it's a very American kind of style, you know, long roads, long drives, stopping off at coffee shops, and doing that on the A1. Down to Luton isn't quite the same as doing it on Route 66 or anything like that, but so I suppose it can seem like it's not as real, but it is very true to what I do. I just wish I could not be so sensitive about it and just throw it all out how it should be.
So I mean, this theme of editing is something that you kind of mentioned with the Hate Camel, and now you've mentioned it with your poetry. Do you think that editing somehow, if you don't edit something, it's kind of you know, more pure, or is there some kind of argument to that? Or
yeah, definitely. I think with Hate Camel, I worked at various magazines in Leeds and down in London, and I've had to proofread things, and it breaks my heart to edit other people's work, because you don't know what you're taking out, and the littlest thing you take out could be the most important thing that they want to keep in. And I've had it done to me plenty of times. So with the Hay Camel, although I can't get over my own self-editing issue, I will continue to self-edit, which annoys me greatly. But I've decided to not edit any contributions. So anything that comes in won't be spell-checked or anything. I'm not checking it for grammar. And the content is whatever they want to put in. So maybe if I print other people's work unedited, I'll eventually get the courage to not edit my own.
Have you been tempted then to photocopy, you know, these napkins or the, you know, the initial sketches of these poems or anything?
Completely. I carry a notebook around me all the time. I've got one in my pocket and one in the glove box of the car. And the thing is, I take them out and I'll write them when I've had a few drinks. And a lot of it, my handwriting isn't great at the best of times. And when I've had a few whiskies, it's even worse. So I wish I could actually read half the stuff I've written when I've drunk, because I'm pretty sure there's some magic in there somewhere, but I just can't figure it out at the moment. Probably need to use the Enigma machine to find out what it says.
So you've almost got to like translate what you're doing as to...
yeah. I even went through a stage of carrying a dictaphone around and recording myself drunk at 2 in the morning when I was sort of saying these things, but it was so...
Did you end up regretting that?
Completely, yeah. I ended up with a file on my laptop that just said random random rants, and it was just me moaning about people, completely unfounded, you know, reason for moaning at people. But then I covered Leeds Fest for a national magazine, and when I went into the press area, they told me I weren't allowed to take my dictaphone in. They took it off me, and I never got it back. So somewhere, someone has a dictaphone with drunken ramblings all over it. Yeah.
Excellent. So let's go forward then. I remember reading an article that was submitted to Artfist. It might have been a poem. No, you did a poem, and then there was somebody did an article about it, about a pop-up bookshop that you did. I was wondering if you could just kind of tell me a little bit about that.
A pop-up bookshop?
Mm.
I don't remember that article, but it is based on a real situation. I was down south recently and actually ran a temporary bookshop for 3 months.
You wrote a poem?
And I wrote a poem. And
there was a photograph with it of the poem.
That's right, and that's probably the one absolutely pure poem I'd written, and it was written completely out of anger. And I got asked to run this bookshop because apparently I'm so approachable and friendly and willing to chat to everybody about everything, which is true, but I think on this one particular day I'd just been worn into the ground with requests of 50 Shades of Grey, when we have some amazing books in this shop and people ask me for the most mundane things. And I remember getting this scrap of paper and a marker pen and just thrashing out how much I hated people. And that was probably the only poem I've never edited afterwards, but I did write it with the intention of, right, I'm going to write this now and send it off in the next 10 minutes. So that was the quickest piece I've ever written and had published. It was published probably hours later.
So. Well, I enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the readers of Artfist did as well.
I don't have the original anywhere. I still have a photo of it, but I'd love to find that original and put that in the Hay Camel.
Yeah. I may maybe just put the photo in so you can't actually read it at the resolution, but that's a poem.
that might work. I'll probably end up putting it in Photoshop first and blacking out some bits now that enough time has gone by.
So, I mean, as well, I've read some of your travel writing, which I've found, again, really intriguing. And the particular article you sent, I think it was a three-parter about knife bowing in Kenya. And yeah. I'll be honest, when I read this, I thought, okay, there's going to be some artistic license here. Fictional account, maybe, you know, slightly exaggerated, but from what you were telling me before the interview, it was watered down.
Absolutely. Though I just mentioned about how much I like to edit my own stuff, and I can't help it. Yeah, knife binding Kenya is completely edited, and I had to make it look a lot more realistic, because the original, the way it happened, the days leading up to, I mean, the original idea was to go to Kenya on holiday and maybe go work in an orphanage for a little bit and do some good deeds. But I ended up seeing locals with these huge what they call pangas, and these are huge knives, and I thought, I have to have one of these just to chop coconuts up with, you know. And I spent 3 days looking for one, and got sent to local village in Shanzu to meet Maasai warriors and all sorts, and ended up getting a knife eventually, having to meet a fella on the beach just by some rocks at midnight, and I very stupidly had a drink in the hotel and went down to meet him with a girlfriend back in the hotel room, wondering if I was going to come back at all. But yeah, it's all very real. And then trying to get it out of the country and bringing it back to Gatwick was another amazing adventure. But I didn't go to Kenya with the intention of buying a knife and writing about it. It just seemed to happen. I think that's the best. That it's just amazing when things like that happen. You know, stories can materialize out of anything. And I still feel like that's one of the most exciting holidays I've had. And it equaled one of my favorite bits of writing, really.
So, how, I mean, just kind of explain to, you know, if people haven't read this article, I mean, can you explain how you managed to get a huge knife through customs for a start?
Well, I was flying out of Mombasa Airport, and I had a Leeds United towel, and I managed to pick this knife up the night before, had great fun with it, chopping up mangoes and coconuts and all sorts, and scaring the monkeys away with it that kept running into the hotel room and rooting around in suitcases. But I wrapped it up in a towel, then double wrapped it, because I had visions of someone throwing the bag in it, piercing straight through the bag and going into someone's abdomen. So I wrapped it up in a towel, took it to the airport, and I think I very naively thought that at Mombasa Airport they wouldn't have scanners and various things, but it went through, and I never sweat so much in my life as I did then. And I watched the security men, their eyes widened as they saw this bag go through the scanner, and then they waited for the person to come and pick it up, which happened to be me. And then I instantly thought, I don't think I'm going to be going home.
So basically, I tried to smuggle it back.
Got it to the airport. They asked me to take the knife out of the bag, and a very seriously brandished this knife high above my head in the airport, Mombasa, with the sun beaming off it and making the blade look almost twice as big as it really was, and horrified travellers behind me knowing they're going to get on a plane possibly with this strange looking guy who's just had a knife pulled out of his bag. But they're very nice to be at the airport, and they just asked me to put it in cargo and not take it on as hand luggage.
That's probably fair enough.
Which I wasn't planning to do anyway, but yeah. And then we got back to Gatwick, and I managed to get it out of Gatwick Airport without any officials coming up to me, really. So
you basically were able to essentially bring in what is a massive, deadly weapon, a huge knife, into the country without a problem.
It was fine. And then a friend pointed out to me, probably about 6 months later, that the weapon I was holding may have actually killed somebody in the violence that occurred around the elections in Kenya years back. Now I kind of hide that knife away in a cupboard and not really look at it that often. But it was good fun bringing it back. It's not something I'd recommend people do, but I did feel very much like a young Hunter S. Thompson on the run with a weapon.
So let's think then. So kind of going forward from now, I mean, you know, you've recently returned to Leeds. What's your plans now?
Well, I spent a lot of time in London, and I was doing a lot, kind of the professional writing I was doing down there didn't allow for much creative freedom. And one thing that I always admired about Leeds when I lived up here for the last 9 years was the amount of magazines and zines that are around that you can write for. And there's lots of creative writing going on. So the idea was to come back, start a zine, and put my name back about with some other magazines. But looking forward to it. I've been here about 2 weeks, really, and already kick-starting Hate Camel, so it's been great.